Hi, welcome to Life After Choice, Caffeine Convos, where we discuss abortion-related issues from a biblical point of view.
I actually wrote a book for those who've been hurt by abortion, and I know my grandchildren and even my husband love to be read to. So I'm going to read to you, and some of you might wish to listen. I'm going to be reading from the book, Prepare a Room, A Path to Peace and Healing for Those Hurt by Abortion. And I'm going to start in, and it'll be in lots of little pieces because there's only so much that can happen in one video viewing. So I'm going to start in, and I hope you enjoy it. I'm going to start with the chapter that's before the first chapter, which would be sort of like a preface or an introduction, but I called it An Open Door. Where I live, February is a month of promise. The rains of winter transform the brown hills into a brilliant green, and the cherry trees begin to bud. I stepped into the month of February in the year 2013 with hopefulness. But my story took an unexpected turn when three unwelcome guests took up residency in my life. Their arrival caused the green hills to fade from my view as they captured me and took over every bit of my world. They were a constant presence in my life, so I named them Dogged Death, Piercing Loss, and Drawn Out Grieving. Let me explain what happened. First, a dear friend of mine died. He was a very important figure in my life as a mentor and one who helped shape my worldview. He became ill and was hospitalized. I did not know how serious his condition was, but I was suddenly filled with an impulse to go to him in the hospital to take care of some unfinished business between us. I wanted to ask his forgiveness for some thoughtless behavior I had displayed. I also wanted to thank him for his mentoring over the course of our 9-year friendship. I wanted his blessing. When I got to the hospital, he graciously forgave me, accepted my thanks, and gave me his blessing. We talked and sang together, and a few days later, he passed. While his death came as a shock to many who knew him, its impact on my life was softened somewhat by the peace and closure I experienced from our last visit together in the hospital. I found it noteworthy that another friend of ours, who did not perceive the urgency and did not see him in his last days, suffered from his death much more than I did. Finding closure took longer for her than it did for me, because of those last few meaningful words I was able to share with him. This was the first death I was to face in 2013, but not the last. Mere months later, my father died of cancer. 53 days after my father's death, my mother died of cancer. Though they were divorced for 47 years, Mom and Dad received the same diagnosis at the same time and rapidly declined, as though connected by an invisible thread. My husband and I cared for each of them in their final days. We served them in their dying. After Mom and Dad died, we held two beautiful memorial services, one for each of them. For my mother's memorial service, my sister and I took great care in preparing a table to look just like the table in Mom's dining room, the center of her life. We covered it with her familiar Guatemalan textiles, placed her cup of coffee and croissant alongside the New York Times crossword puzzle, characteristically all filled in pen. Beside that were her jar of artist brushes, a selection of charcoal pencils, and her familiar sketchbook. We scattered photos of her beloved great-grandchildren, just as we might have found them on her table. We finished off by adding a half-eaten package of Viennese wafers, her favorite. The table was a tribute to Mom, and it brought a smile of recognition to all who knew and loved her and spent time with her at her table. For Dad's memorial service, I composed a list of wisdom nuggets gleaned from him over my lifetime. I managed to capture his special humor as I read them aloud to the guests. Lots of people came and shared stories, laughed and wept at both memorials, all in appropriate public expression of love and honoring that helped everyone say their goodbyes. As time went on, I found that my grieving process continued in many different ways. It involved honoring the memories of three beloved people who lived long lives, marked by dreams fulfilled, achievements and relationships, some relationships that weathered every storm, others that were fractured beyond repair. All three were linked to me by years of history. I sorted through their belongings, cried, took long walks, wrote cathartic poems, curled up in my husband's lap, and listened to music that touched a private place of sadness. I forgave past hurts and gradually came to terms with their absence. Mostly I poured out my sorrow to the one who gives life and knows the count of our days. He shared the burden of my lament. Sometimes the realization of death's finality would punch me in the gut, and I would struggle for my breath. Then that moment would pass mercifully, leaving me mystified by the rare glimpse of human mortality. I was able to go on with my life in peace, with closure. At the heart of the honoring of these dear people's lives was an assumption that they mattered. Their lives were worthy of tribute. They were known and beloved. As I considered their contributions to the world they left behind, I had some questions. I couldn't help wondering how I will be remembered and honored when I pass away. What is a person's worth? Where does our value come from? Is it all about leaving a legacy of great works? In the case of both my parents, studios full of artwork. What if we do nothing of note with our lives? Or what if no one knew us? Would we still be entitled to some honor? Would we still be beloved? Would we still have value? I'm sharing with you about these deaths and what I experienced during that difficult year in order to make a comparison. Many years before I lost my dear mentor and my parents, I experienced a different sort of loss. For this one that was lost, I heard no diagnosis. The life lived by this one was not in any way noteworthy. I shared very little history with this one. I had no memories of her. We had no issues to clear up. She had no belongings for me to sort through, no accomplishments for me to reflect on, no dreams fulfilled, no deepened or fractured relationships. She never did anything to me that needed forgiving. There was no lifetime of successes and failures, no song, no poem, no Viennese wafers, no list of nuggets of wisdom to share with others, no birthday to remember. She was not honored with any memorial service. No one spoke of her. I did not care for her in her final days. When she died, I had no idea who she was. I didn't even consider that I had cause for grief in the case of this loss. From such a description, you might think this other person who died had no connection to me at all. Yet she, and of course, I don't really know if this person was a he or a she, spent her entire brief life inside my body, dwelling in the most intimate part of my anatomy. She was my very own child. While the deaths of my parents and my dear friend opened the door to a process of grief and gradual healing, the death of this other one brought me down blind alleys and closed doors. I plunged into a decades-long wandering through a miry darkness of guilt, shame, condemnation, and confusion, and mostly silence. Decades after the loss occurred, I was still no further along in processing it than when it first happened. The loss I have just described took place when I had an abortion. With other deaths, I could travel well-worn avenues of grief processing with the help of booklets, phone calls with hospice staff, late-night conversations with my sister, condolences offered by all, and the comfort of the Jewish mourner's kaddish, a recitation used in the Jewish faith that speaks of God's eternal qualities. But in the case of my aborted child, I couldn't find the door to a healthy grieving process. I didn't know how to understand what happened, and I had no way to process the shock of it. Not only did I miss out on grieving, but I was also burdened with guilt for the part I played in my child's death. I was angry at myself and those who influenced me to take such action. The story of my abortion was complex, and there was a lot to untangle. How could I make sense of it? Would it just hang there like a dark cloud over my whole life? Would there ever come a time when I could be free of it and find peace and healing? And because I only have 10 minutes on TikTok, I'm going to stop there. I still have a bit more for this first chapter, and I'll tackle that in the next reading. I hope you're enjoying this. Again, this is Prepare a Room, A Path to Peace and Healing for Those Hurt by Abortion, which is available on Amazon if you would like to read it yourself and go through a 10-step process that will bring you some relief from the pain of abortion. Thank you so much for listening. Like, share, and subscribe. Help us grow. Visit us at prepareroom.com
at thefoundlings.net. Support us at givesendgo.com/preparearoomministries.